November 13th, 2004. Approximately 500 people took the streets of downtown Toronto for a march organized by OCAP, the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. They took up banners, they took the streets, and they eventually took an abandoned building on Jarvis. The intent was to occupy the building, at least for the time being, until the city tore it down to build condos. The squat lasted approximately 30 minutes, until the Ontario police made their arrests, made their evictions, and retook the building. The protests lasted into the night. The audio you are about to hear takes you through that march, through that building, and through the streets of Toronto. We'll also be talking with Gaëtan Hérault, who's been facing this crisis on the streets of Toronto alongside the homeless people he works with. He'll share with us his unique perspective on the housing crisis in Toronto, as well as give us some idea of how this problem has grown and changed in the last 10 years.
Here. This is so significant. It's important to people, to see the people who use this place in this community. People were starting to rush in, and people had planned to try to, you know, block the door, keep the cops out as much as possible. And I don't know what happened. Like, I saw some cop and some guy getting a dust up, like a punching match. And then, like, I didn't feel anything. And then like, a second later, my whole face was burning. And I guess it was tear gas or pepper spray or something. I don't know. But it burned. There's some people who got it a lot worse than me. Like, I only got it in my mouth and stuff, but. Some people had all over their eyes, all over their face. The carts didn't work out, I guess, as all people had hoped, but...
Yeah.
But, I guess, that's about it. Like I said, it was fucking brutal at the door.
Is there more change?
Get away, man, a brother.
else coming in, it's likely that they will want to give people an opportunity to leave, and we don't want to stop that.
Change. Do I have any more?
My me too. Is one of my eyes.
Do I have any more change?
I don't know. More change, Nick. Find Nick.
Six, four, eat it. Running water. For hundreds of people to have single units, family units, literally hundreds of people could live in this building starting today for the rest of this winter. But instead, Miller has acted today and ordered in his goon squad to ensure that those people instead spend this winter in shelter and on the street.
Back behind the post!
I don't care if
you call someone a cunt.
Back behind the post!
The government can't get off its ass to make housing! It can't get off its ass to open existing buildings! And now they're gonna pay cops overtime to stop us from creating what rightfully ours! More cops! Too many cops! Not enough justice! Too many cops! Not enough justice!
Back behind the post, everyone. Back behind the post, everyone. Anybody want to comment? Stand back for me, please. No more press release. Step back, sir. Please. Way back.
Unfortunately, it's still a democracy. We live in. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
You're talking anarchy really when you just say we're taking this building.
No, it's not.
No, that's all it is.
What we're talking about is a very basic concept. People are outside freezing to death.
Have a good night.
No, you're gonna hear me out. You gotta stand here. I know.
And you know what? That's our job, and we do it willingly.
And right now, the job you're doing is you're blocking the doors of an empty building that could house hundreds of people for the winter. With no harm to anyone. They're tearing this down. This is going to be torn down in February, and they're going to build condos.
Yet another condo.
So there's no harm in having people sleep here for these 3 months in the winter.
Yeah, now you think they're going to leave when they're asked to in 3 months?
No. Well, they'll pull you guys in. You guys can throw them out then.
Well, we're trying to avoid that situation right from the start. Right?
Yeah, and keep people freezing to death over the winter. Good fucking job, guys.
Last night, we found the sort of pamphlet that the city put together in order to sell this building. And all the fucking pamphlet talks about is the condominium market in Toronto.
So the
property developer that owns this building is named David Miller. And David Miller today, for the first time, was challenged by us by taking over a building. And he responded the same way Lastman responded, by sending in the police, by arresting our friends, by throwing people who have no home out on the street for another night. And this is bullshit, we're not going to take it. I told you before that this building has heating, that this building has running water, and it's carpeted and pretty comfortable inside. There's another building like that I know of.
One, two, or three.
And it's called City Hall. And if they're not going to let us stay here, at the end of this month, we're going to City Hall and we're going to let Miller know that if we can't stay here,
the doors of City Hall are always open, right, Miller?
At this point, the building is still occupied. Unfortunately, it's by the Emergency Task Force. So the options for getting back inside tonight are pretty slim. But we have another meal to serve, so people that are cold and hungry, we're going to make our way back to the church where we started this day.
Well, I'm talking here with Gaetan Hero.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, hi.
All right. And he's been working with OCAP and for Street Health in Toronto. And we're going to talk to him today about some of the homeless issues in Toronto right now, and partly in association with the OCAP squad action that was held this past Saturday. So I guess first, Gaetan, if you can tell me how long you've been working with homeless in Toronto.
Yeah, I've been working in East Downtown Toronto with Dundas and Sherbourne for the last 15 years, and I've for the first 10 years I worked in the drop-in, and in the last 5 or 6 years or so I've been working in just helping people replace their ID for the last 5 years, going to drop-ins and shelters. So that's how long I've been working down in this area.
Now, over the course of those 15 years, have you seen changes in either the population dynamics of the homeless or the way the homeless are treated in the city? What are some of the changes that you've seen over the last past 15 years?
Well, I think the worst scenario that we've seen is we've had a crisis of homelessness that the city acknowledged in 1998. The city in 1998 declared the homelessness a national disaster. And this was as a result, actually, of three men that froze to death in 1996, actually. Erwin Anderson and Marcellus Campani, and there was one more man. As a result of their death, the city was forced to ask the federal government to open up Moss Park Armories. And over 200 people had to come in during that year, during that winter. And all of this has been tied to major cutbacks by the Harris government that occurred in 1995, welfare cuts. Our province isn't built housing anymore, changes to the Landlord and Tenant Act. So we began to see an outstanding number of people finding themselves in the hostels. The hostels were packed. There were over 1,000 people on the streets. You would walk down in the parks and everywhere, and you'd see just hundreds and hundreds of people in the middle of the winter staying on the streets. And what we've seen is the city's response to this has been primarily, they did have an inquiry looking into it, which was the Golden Report, and which asked for housing, but we never got it. So as a result of not getting the housing, the city has dealt often with the homeless people on the streets. What we've seen is criminalization of homeless people, social cleansing in the downtown core, heavy gentrification in the area that we're in, no relief for people at all in terms of what they're going through. So even with the new government that we have right now, the Liberal government, the McGuinty government, who had promised some relief around housing and welfare hikes, we've seen nothing.
So
and people are continue to live in the conditions that live in.
So, yeah. What you're saying is that the homeless problem in Toronto has gotten worse and is getting worse.
Well, it's really, really bad. It's getting worse. It's not just in Toronto, by the way. We've seen this across Ontario in terms of Ottawa, Barrie. Peterborough has the largest homeless population per capita. So we're seeing this not just in large urban centers, but also in some of the smaller cities around the area. And we also know that these issues are ongoing issues. I know that Montreal, I go there often, are seeing many, many homeless people on the streets in Quebec. And again, this is all tied to this agenda of a cutback to social services, which was actually began by the Liberal government with Axworthy when, I think it was 1993 or 94, the Liberal government stopped building social housing, and also there were major downloadings around welfare and all those issues. So now what we're seeing is cities who are attempting to deal with these issues, who are unable to deal with this, but at the same time who are trying to deal with these issues around homelessness by, again, creating panhandling bylaws. We have the Safe Streets Act in Ontario, which basically makes it a crime for someone to squeegee and panhandle on the street. So OCAP has been fighting back ever since those cuts came in 1995. And we do that in a number of ways. And one of the ways we do is we take over squats. We just recently went into a Loblaws and took over $3,000 worth of food and redistributed to our neighbor, to poor people in our neighborhood. So those are the kinds of things that we're doing.
Have you seen a change in the actual demographic of homeless people? Are there more homeless youth, or have the ratio stayed the same but the number of homeless increased?
Well, what's been happening is when Ann Golden did her study of homelessness, the highest number of homeless people, the highest growth was in families and children. So that was one of the highest numbers. I think the numbers have doubled in terms of people that we're talking about, families who can't afford the housing, who find themselves without housing. That was the largest number. In Toronto, we have a large Native population, and we have a lot of Native people who actually are living and dying on the streets. Over 40 to 50% of the people who died on the street, and there have been over 1,000 people who died on the streets in the last 10 years in Toronto alone, have been Indians. And so we're really, really concerned in terms of what we're seeing. We've just had an outbreak of TB and we just had the last couple of weeks, there was an inquest into three men that died of TB a couple of years ago. So all of these conditions are really, really creating havoc for people's lives. And again, with no relief in sight. And so we use direct action to deal with this shit.
One of the things that kind of keeps coming up, I guess, in this debate is this number, 1,000 homeless have died in the last 10 years in the streets of Toronto. And I was actually recording a police officer after being told this number, and his response was, you know, complete incredulity. And, you know, one of the things that was said is that, you know, someone died last night. Last night. And it was impossible to get this police officer to believe that. So I'm wondering, you know, why or what is the nature of this disconnect between the people on the streets who have these numbers and the people in power who don't?
Well, I think what we're seeing is, I mean, just to give you a sense of what was happening is in 95 when Harris decided and the Tory government decided they were going to cut welfare. I mean, one of the first things, and poor people were the first people that they attacked in terms of cutting back and but one of the things they had to do that is they had to demonize the people who were receiving those services, because you can't just cut services to people who are in need, right? So then there's a whole propaganda machine that goes out and says, you know, that these people are lazy, they steal, so now we have welfare cops, you know, people are put in prison if they're caught working outside of welfare, that kind of stuff. So we have a whole media machine that's criminalizing and talking about poor people in a way that makes it possible to get rid of these services, right? So it was the same when EI was cut back by the federal government. There was major changes, and it has a direct effect in people's ability to survive. If you know, have a family of four or five and you're working and you lose your job and all of a sudden you can't get EI, or your EI is...
Sorry, what's EI?
Employment insurance.
Oh, thanks.
And your employment insurance is all of a sudden not enough to live on, and it runs out, and all of a sudden you find yourself on welfare, which is even less. Immediately you'll find yourself in serious trouble in terms of your housing and in terms of, you know, the income that's coming in. And I think we all understand... Poor people, anyways, all understand, you know, what it means to try and survive on welfare, and we all know that you can't. The police have their own agenda. They come from certain backgrounds. They're paid very, very well to enforce laws that are, in my opinion, very, very discriminatory in terms of what's going on. When I first started to work in the neighborhood, you know, we had services, and now. If you try and put a drop-in like the one I worked in 15 years ago, which doesn't exist anymore, it would be the Residents Association, Business Association would fight to make sure that it didn't, it couldn't come here. There's actually a bylaw that was set up in the city a couple of years ago that says we can't build any more hostels in downtown core. So there are all this dynamic that's created when you know, this propaganda that's created. But then when you come down at ground zero, to use, you know, a term, you see what's happening. You see people coming into these shelters and to the drop-ins, and you see what kind of shape they're in. And then you go to places where, you know, I went when Tom Baines died. I, beside the Don jail, I went to the bus shelter, and then people told me how he died. You know, there was somebody with him. When Margaret died a couple of weeks ago, the same thing. I talked to people, and they told me how she died, you know, behind the O'Keefe Center. And when Robert died, you know, Robert Franklin just got housing about a few months ago, for about 6 months, been on the streets. You know, they talked to me about how he died. I mean, these are real, very, very real stories. And the police know. They find people. They know what's happening, and they try and keep it quiet.
What, just to talk about the squad actions,
yeah.
Again, some of these have been really successful. Like, for instance, I think the Pope squat,
yeah.
where you guys had that for 3 months.
And yeah.
Now, the other squats haven't been so successful. I mean, successful is a relative term. I think they have been successful in some ways. But what are plans for trying to make these squats more effective? Is this really about surfacing the issue, or is this really an attempt to get housing by force?
Well, I think our policy and our way of working has always been to try and use direct action to make sure and to deal with people's immediate needs. And the squat over the years has been one tactic. And like you say, the Pope squat was reasonably successful in terms of how it went. But what people have to understand also is, although the police moved in, and we thought that might be the situation. I mean, it was their old home, right? It was their turf, you know, a while back. They used to have their head office there, and they took it personally. But people understand that, you know, in organizing around the squat, we also gained a lot of ground, because in order to organize for a squat like that, we have to be going to the shelters. We have to be going to the streets, we have to go to the hostels, and we talk to people about housing. And we marched almost 400 to 500 people out of the church, the All Saints Church here, that's used as a day shelter, onto the streets. We marched on the streets, and it's important for people to see that resistance. It's important for people to see a militant organization saying that, you know, that the poverty that you're experiencing is not tied to your, you know, because you made bad decisions along your way. There are policies that affect, you know, your lives, and the environment that you live in is not just connected to the way that you make decisions, but also by government policies. So when you measure, you know, an action like we had on Saturday, it would have been nice to house people, but at the same time, we also got together. We came out a very militant way, and we came in very forcefully and attempted to take that building. And then we come back to our communities, and we talk about the action, and then we talk about other ways of bringing attention to the fact that we don't have housing, and we build from that. We've been here in the neighborhood now for over 10 years. We have a strong, strong base. You don't. It's not that easy to organize a rally of that nature that says we're going to go and take something. Very, very few organizations can actually do that, mobilize 400 to 500 people that way.
Do you think that's this kind of militant response to the poverty issue has caused homeless people to become more empowered? Or what has the effect of this movement been on the actual homeless themselves?
Well, I think in the end, what it has forced the city and the province and also the federal government to often think about the kinds of things that they do. I mean, we're not getting, you know, they're still not building the housing. We're having problems around the welfare, but we are creating a mood in the neighborhood, and there are people who understand the dynamics. It's not hard to walk down Dundas and Sherbourne and to talk to people about the lack of housing. As a matter of fact, these are the very people who tell us the stories. I mean, many of the people who came to that action on Saturday would have needed a space that night. They need a place to stay. They know what it means not to have housing. And rather than hearing a situation where some right-wing politician, you know, describes the homeless people on the street as a shame of Toronto, not because the people living in poverty. That should be their shame, that the fact that we have such a rich city and people are living on the streets and have nothing. They're ashamed of the very people, their own people. So we create an environment, we create a political space, and it's a voice that goes out there and says, no, we have a right to these things. There's a reason why, and we have to fight for, if they're not going to give it to us, we're going to fight for this stuff. And we have fought in the past. We fought on June 15th, you know, for these things. We fought for buildings. We fought a city hall. We shut down city hall around these issues. And when we come, they know we're coming, and they know that we're angry at what's going on. And people should be angry at what's going on, not just in Toronto, but in other cities where you have, you know, your own people are dying on the streets. I mean, New York City, we were reading about New York City and the homeless crisis there. People were dying there on a regular basis.
What can we look forward to from OCAP?
Well, our next action right now is Christmas is coming. We're getting ready for another food action, and we're going to make sure that people have food in their fridges at the end of the month. The last time we went, I think we took about $3,000 worth of food from a grocery store. I think we're looking at taking more people and trying to feed more people, and I think that's what we're looking for Christmas. And then in the new year, I know that we're people might not know, we have a serious bed bug problem in Toronto, which is really, really affecting poor people in our neighborhood, particularly people living in social housing and also in the hostels. So we're talking about actually going to City Hall, maybe with some bed bugs, and dumping a few bed bugs there to try and get them to pay attention to that problem.
Absolutely.
Yeah, these are the kinds of things that we're looking at. I mean, in the end, people have to understand that we're forced to act. I mean, the people that we work with, people or organizations, have to meet some of those basic needs, you know, every day, and they have to deal with those needs. And unless we can deal with those or provide some of those some relief to those things, then we won't be effective. So for instance, when we went on Saturday, one of the things we did is we fed over, I think, 300 to 400 people. We put on we put food because we know that people need food to eat, to survive. If they're going to come to a demonstration, they have to be fed. They have to. So we made sure that people ate, and then we went there and we spoke and we marched there, and at least people's bellies were full. It would have been nice to stay that night and so that people had relief from the cold and that cold pavement. But then we have to reorganize and we are talking about going back to City Hall to talk about the surplus housing. We haven't talked much about what that building was. That building was actually a building that the city owned that they're in the process of selling in the middle of a housing crisis, one of the largest housing crises the city's ever had.
This is the building that the squat was...
Yes, the 590 Jervis, the old cop headquarters, and used to house some social services in there, so some programs.
Right.
But as we speak, the city says that they understand that they need housing, but they're selling off their stock, and they're selling that stock in the middle of poor communities. As we speak, they're getting ready to flatten Regent Park, which is over 2,000 families living in Regent Park, and they're going to redevelop Regent Park, and we have no sense right now of what that's going to look like. The promises they made, they're starting to break. So there's no place for poor people now. So we have to fight back, because if we don't, this territory will be gentrified. Yeah.
Well, I look forward to it, and yeah. I will be seeing you around.
Okay. Take care, sir.
Thanks for talking to me.
Bye-bye.
Bye.